Welcome to Christian Medical and Dental Association's chapel. We trust this message will encourage your walk with the Lord.
113 days, folks. 113 days. We start our national convention in St. Charles, Missouri. And I'm showing this slide not because I want to make any of you who are very intimately involved in preparing for that anxious, but I wanted to show you that graphic in the upper left-hand corner. I'm just grateful for creative thinkers that we have on staff. And when Mandy Morin, I wish she was here so I could give her the shout out, but hopefully she's listening online. When she suggested a theme for this year's convention, I went, "What in the world are you talking about? I've never heard of this spoke in the wheel." And she unpacked that a little bit, and I immediately fell in love with the idea. Certainly, it's an advocacy, it's taking action sort of theme, a spoke in the wheel, and maybe some of you still think it's, you know, the spoke in the wheel, but that's not what it is. It is, in the movie that just came out, I'm going to talk about here in a second, they actually used the word stick, so it wouldn't be confused with spoke, to stick in the wheels of injustice, to stop those wheels from moving forward and crushing people. So I fell in love with this, and I appreciate the graphic that between our team, digital media team, and Mandy put together this graphic of exploding the wheels of injustice. Now, I first became familiar with Dietrich Bonhoeffer. His book was released, which created a fair amount of controversy. And if you know anything at all about Bonhoeffer Foundation and the Bonhoeffer family, there is a huge feud between the Bonhoeffer family and Eric Metaxas over his book. Most of you know who Eric Metaxas is and know kind of the path that he has taken in conservatism and his radio program and so forth. But this was actually my first book that I ever decided to try out this thing called Kindle. And I downloaded this book on Bonhoeffer's life just a week before I returned to Kenya in 2010 and just read through this 600-page book on Bonhoeffer over the 2 weeks of transition of living in the U.S. and living in Kenya. Really enjoyed the book big time. But then in November, just as we're thinking about our national convention, I had no idea that a new movie was coming out about Bonhoeffer. I know Gene told me he saw it. I know Bert has seen it. Anyone else see it during the holidays? It came out. Okay. There's a fair amount of controversy. Bert and I were talking about a few weeks ago about some people's reaction, including 70-some members of the Bonhoeffer family. That are frustrated with the way that their grandfather, father, great-grandfather was portrayed in the November release. And as if that wasn't enough, during the holidays, as I was on vacation listening to various podcasts, I listened to Sean McDowell's podcast, and he had a Bonhoeffer expert, someone who's written a PhD on Bonhoeffer's life on his program, talking about Bonhoeffer. Heard a lot about Bonhoeffer, and then I began thinking, okay, 2025, I'm going to be speaking in chapel, we've got the national convention, you know how I like to do series of chapels, so I decided to tackle this. By the way, this was Christianity Today. Bonhoeffer bears little resemblance to reality, criticizing this movie that just came out. And it is true, they captured that he's a chain smoker, which is interesting. One of history in the last 200 years, most famous theologians, was actually a chain smoker back in the day in the 20s and 30s when a lot of people smoked. Here's something that Bonhoeffer wrote when he was in prison. And I think it's important because when I show you the title to these chapels that I want to share with you about what Bonhoeffer lived for and taught us, I think it's important that I don't want to be in the category of accused of being too much like Eric Metaxas, at least what he's being accused of. This is what Bonhoeffer wrote. In the world, the church should be known by its service and its work for justice and peace. But within itself, it is sustained by the disciplines of worship, prayer, and the sacraments, which, with the creed, I'm not sure exactly which creed he's referring to, but a creed, remain hidden at the heart of the life of the church, not thrust upon the world in some triumphalist manner. That all those things that are very precious to us, we keep within within our body, within the church. So just briefly, one of those wonderful things, if those of you who don't use ChatGPT, it is, I had just over my vacation, I just use it every day for fun things. And Bonhoeffer life events and writings, I said, hey, ChatGPT, tell me what happened significant in Bonhoeffer's life, including his travels and his writings. And boom, out comes these three slides. At age 21, he got his doctorate in theology from the University of Berlin and wrote his dissertation on the communion of saints, all about ecclesiology. At age 23, he moved to Barcelona, Spain, and was assistant pastor. 24 is when he moved to the U.S., went to Union Seminary, and it was there, those of you who saw the movie or have read the book know he got very, very intimate with the Negro, as he called it, the Negro church in New York City, and began attending church there. And it's very possible that there is where his own heart was transformed, attending a black church in New York City, and became familiar with the plight of the American Negro, as he writes, that then prepared him for what the Jews faced in Germany. At age 25, he came back to Germany and became an ordained pastor in the Lutheran church. At age 27, in 1933, Hitler came to power. And Nazis were growing in influence. He had just come back from the U.S., and he's like, what in the world? What is the church? And he actually got on the radio and began to decry and to criticize the Nazis. And in the middle of this radio program, he was cut off. The powers that be would not allow this broadcast to continue. It was during this time he began writing about this whole concept of cheap grace versus costly grace. And his book later came, The Cost of Discipleship. In 1935, he helped start the Confessing Church and the seminary underground of Finkenwald, where he wrote the book Life Together, one of his other big publications. In 1937, age 31, his seminary was shut down, and it was during this time that he wrote The Cost of Discipleship. And then finally, 1939, he was told, you need to go to the U.S., you're going to be, the Gestapo's after you. His friends and family told him, get out and survive and come back when it's safer. He did go to the New York City, decided, God doesn't want me in the United States or away from my people. I have to go back to Germany, which is an amazing, courageous decision that he made. So he went back, and in 1941, he joined the Abwehr, the German military intelligence, to cover over some of his resistance activities. And in 1943, he was caught by the Gestapo for having helped Jewish people escape into Switzerland. He finally was imprisoned in 1944. And his early imprisonment, I'm currently reading through his book, Letters and Papers from Prison, and his early parts of his imprisonment, they all really thought he was engaged and lots of communication with his fiancée and really thought that this could be a short imprisonment and that he was treated pretty well. He could ask for things to be brought from his family, and he did a lot of writing during this time. Letters and Papers from Prison is that book I mentioned. And then finally, 80 years ago, this April, April 9th, 1945, the incinerator, the crematory, was broken at this place called Flossenbürg, and so he was hung, thrown on a trash pile, and burned along with others. Was executed on April 9th, and many of those who knew him said he would have been so pleased that he, like the Jewish people that he was an advocate for, suffered along with them a fate like they had suffered. To be burned on a trash pile. I did a word cloud of Dietrich Bonhoeffer's writings, and this is what comes up. The big words are grace and cheap and together and Christ, and of course, right in the middle, discipleship, his classic work, Cost of Discipleship, ethics, and then a big word, suffering. Lots of other words that I will get to eventually, but that word suffering is actually a little bit of a surprise to me as I began to take a deeper dive into Bonhoeffer's life. And so I wanted to talk in the time that I have remaining, the suffering God and his true followers. Suffering God is a phrase that really can be attributed to Bonhoeffer, Next month, I'd like to talk about discipleship and Christian living, according to a new theology that Bonhoeffer talked about. In April, advocacy in the church, who stands firm. And this is going to be a little bit of a preview of what I want to share in my State of the Organization address for the National Convention, and my CEO address on Saturday morning. His question, who is able to stand firm? And he gives a really powerful answer to that. And then finally in May, after the National Convention, something that also is very unique to Dietrich Bonhoeffer, religionless Christianity. So the title of this series I'm calling is The Triumph of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And I was going to share with you today why I am calling it this, but I'm going to wait until a later chapel. But I am calling this The Triumph of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, The Suffering God and His Church. And in one of his letters from prison, writing to a friend of his, he says, Matthew 8:17 makes it quite clear that Christ helps us not by virtue of his omnipotence, but rather by virtue of his weakness and suffering. This is the crucial distinction between Christianity and all religions. Human religiosity directs people in need to the power of God in the world, God as Deus ex machina, or God out of the machine. Again, something that he refers to many times in his writing, God out of the machine. Or another one of those who are experts on his life would say that he would describe as the God of the gaps. Like, God is for whatever else the modern world can't handle, we do have God. And Bonhoeffer's contention his whole life is, God and Christ are at the center of our lives, and they can't be on the margins or filling in. He's not the God of the gaps. He's the God at the heart of our lives. The Bible directs people toward the powerlessness and the suffering of God. Only the suffering God can help. And I just got this image. This is not Bonhoeffer's image, but just an image of Christ carrying the cross, which is in line with what he's talking about, that a suffering God incarnate is the gospel, in essence, dying on our behalf. Paul spent a lot of time in his epistles, especially to the Corinthians, talking about weakness and pain and suffering and vulnerability. In 2 Corinthians 10, he talks about we have this treasure in jars of clay, and we're hard-pressed, but we're not crushed, persecuted, but not abandoned. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 2 to 4, he tells the Corinthians, I already gave you a warning when I was with you the second time. I now repeat while absent. On my return, I will not spare those who sinned earlier or any of the others, since you're demanding proof that Christ is speaking through me. He is not weak in dealing with you, but is powerful among you. For to be sure, he was crucified in weakness, yet he lives by God's power. In the same way, we are weak in him, yet by God's power, we will live with him to serve you. Bonhoeffer also wrote in one of those letters, the God of the Bible is not the God of religion, but the suffering God. And this was the starting point for Bonhoeffer's worldly interpretation. It's kind of interesting to think about being worldly, because in the context, especially of 1 John, we think, you know, be in the world but not of the world. To be worldly for us today would be a very negative thing. But he espoused a different kind of worldliness. His view is only by living completely in this world that one learns to have faith. By this worldliness, I mean living unreservedly in life's duties, its problems, its successes, as well as its failures. In so doing, we throw ourselves completely into the arms of God, taking seriously not our own sufferings, but those of God in the world. That, I think, Bonhoeffer says, is faith. And this was a quote from Metaxas's book. In a prologue that's in his letters and papers from prison, this prologue was a writing just before he was arrested. Some things that he wrote, he knew he was probably in deep trouble with the Gestapo, might be in prison, but he was still free. And he wrote some things. He's basically looking back over the previous 10 years in Germany, in the 1930s and early turn around of 1940, 42, What have we learned? And one of the key things that he talks about what we have learned is what he termed the view from below. It remains an experience of incomparable value that we have for once learned to see the great events of world history from below, from the perspective of the outcasts, the suspects, the maltreated, the powerless, the oppressed and reviled. In short, from the perspective of the suffering. And then on page 20, we learn indeed that personal suffering is a more useful key, a more fruitful principle than personal happiness for exploring the meaning of the world in contemplation and action. And Jeff, I've remembered a couple of conversations we've had with our friend Carl Truman. And Truman frequently reminds us that it's okay, brothers and sisters in North America and in Europe, it's okay to be in the minority. It's okay to be on the fringe. In fact, we thrive on the fringe. It's a little bit along these lines of a view from below that it's when we're on the fringe that some really important, godly, Christ-like, driving us to Christ things can happen, especially in the area of community, And that will be for another day. According to Bonhoeffer, it is infinitely easier to suffer, and he gives a list of things that make it easier to suffer, in obedience to a human command than in the freedom of one's very own responsible action. So he says to his fellow Lutheran German people, you would rather suffer under the command of the Nazis and of your Führer, you find it easier to suffer defeat and problems under the hands of a madman than to suffer because you say, no, I will stand up against the regime. So you find it's easier to suffer than to suffer because you responsibly say, like Bonhoeffer did, no, killing Jews and doing all these other things, this Aryan race, is all definitely doesn't belong within the church. He also says it's easier to suffer in community with others than in solitude. It's easier to suffer publicly and with honor than in the shadow and in dishonor. And in some respects, he felt himself that he was now in the shadow, in jail, in the cell, through putting one's bodily life at stake than to suffer through the spirit. And then he points out, our Lord Jesus did all the hard suffering. Christ suffered in freedom. He chose. It says in John, in middle chapters of John, no one takes it from me. I lay it down of my own accord. So Jesus suffered in his freedom of his own responsibility and obedience to the Father. In solitude, no one was with him. Even the Father at the end said, why have you forsaken me? He suffered in the shadow. He suffered in dishonor. He suffered in body and in spirit. So according to Bonhoeffer, our Lord Jesus did all the difficult suffering. Well, I've had a chance to meet, I think probably Jean knows Alex as well, from Sudan. I don't necessarily believe in coincidences. Those of you who are NCIS fans and fans of Gibbs on NCIS know that he doesn't believe in coincidence either. But I woke up this morning thinking about this chapel, and some of you have seen this Doctor's Life Support from ICMDA. Some of you, like Trish, contributed to these devotionals. Well, today's devotional, January 7th, is from Alex Bolick. I hadn't really thought about talking about Alex this morning, but the more I got to thinking and reading his devotional today, I got to thinking, he's a modern East African Sudanese Bonhoeffer. And I didn't read, until reading this devotional this morning, I didn't realize that he was an orphan. He was a Sudanese orphan, had no family, but by God's favor and blessing, and through his own obedience, was able to go to medical school in Romania. He has a master's in public and tropical health. He's worked as a GP and medical director in Khartoum in Sudan for a bunch of NGOs. He's chairman of CMDA in South Sudan. He is the Africa coordinator for ICMDA, and he's now the ICMDA regional secretary. Actually, I think he's now, this is old news, he's now actually coordinator for all of Sub-Saharan Africa. Not been able to have children, married to Helen, and they care for one of his sibs who passed away, a number of their kids, so he takes care of a number of orphans himself. In Jakarta in November, when I went to Jakarta, Alex gave one of the morning devotionals and shared more of his story, how he also, because of his education and opportunities, was told by friends and family in Sudan, you've got the opportunity, go to Canada or go to the UK. Why would you stay here in Sudan? He describes with his wife, not infrequently, ducking down on the bedroom floor, bullets passing through their bedroom in the midst of conflict in Sudan. And he said, in many respects, it made sense that my wife and I should flee to Canada. He said, but I just, in my time with the Lord, in my heart, as I struggled with this, I really felt, how could I abandon my fellow brothers and sisters in Christ in Sudan and go to Canada? I really felt, even though many friends, good Christian friends, were leaving the country, I could not flee. I had to stay and suffer with my brothers and sisters in Sudan. And God has blessed. Now, he's not, as far as I know, not been in prison. Alex Bolek has not been in prison. I don't know what other kinds of suffering that Alex has had, but he has been a strong voice, and God has elevated this man. I met him sitting right here in 2017. He's a preacher, a pastor, he's an author, very influential in Africa, and ICMDA has put him over all of sub-Saharan Africa because of his leadership. It was the inner heart struggle for Alex that he shared with me one-on-one and with us in devotions in Jakarta. It was the inner heart struggle. What does God want me to do? In this current circumstance, should I flee, should I stay? And this is just a little excerpt from a teaching series that I have done at a number of places with CMDA called Connecting to the Father with a 5G Heart. The fifth G is guard your heart, and Proverbs 4:23, I want to use just as I close here this morning and want to leave you with some encouragement as well as admonition. Proverbs 4:23, arguably the wisest man that ever walked on the face of this earth, Solomon said, above all else, guard your heart, for it determines the course of your life. And I share in settings with docs and others when I share this, it's like if you started a course and the professor said, above all else, memorize this paragraph if you want to pass this course. And every single one of us, that would be one of the first things we do the first night when we would start memorizing that paragraph or learning that material that the professor says, above all else, if you want to pass this test, you've got to do this. And Solomon says, above all else, we know the great commandment, we know the great commission. This is what I call the great caution. Guard your heart, for it determines the course of your life. There's a British preacher who wrote an entire book in the mid-17th century on this one verse from Proverbs 4:23. John Flavel wrote this book, Keeping Your Heart, Keeping the Heart. In King James, it says, keep the heart. So Flavel writes, guarding or keeping the heart should be understood as the diligent and constant use and improvement of all holy means and duties to preserve the soul from sin and to maintain its sweet and free communion with God. And in his book, he has about 10 chapters when he talks about when our hearts are most vulnerable. Several seasons in our life, like a season of prosperity. He starts his first chapter as a season of prosperity and spends several pages talking about why our hearts are vulnerable when we're prospering. He also talks about a season of temptation. His second chapter about seasons is called A Season of Adversity. And he writes, when providence frowns on you and blasts your outward comforts, then look to your hearts. Keep them with all diligence from complaining against God or fainting under his hand. For troubles, though sanctified, are still troubles. Even rose bushes and holy holly thistles have their prickles. And he also says, afflictions cause panic and confusion, even in the best hearts. these statements by Flavel this morning remind me of what our brother and sister Doug and Ruth are going through. It also reminds me what Tom Grosch has been going through. It can cause a diagnosis of cancer or dwindling from a health perspective, especially when you're younger, can cause a great deal of confusion. What is God up to in my life or in their life? Rusty, the same way at this point in time, a season of adversity. Flavel writes, afflictions are God's workmen acting on our hearts to pull down our pride and security in the flesh. Flavel writes, my Father is working a design of love on my soul, and do I do well to be angry with him? All that he does is in pursuit of and reference to some eternal, glorious purpose for my soul. Oh, it is my ignorance of God's design that makes me quarrel with him. Bonhoeffer wrote, in one of his letters to a friend, to change the subject completely, not only action, but suffering too is a way to freedom. In suffering, liberation consists in being allowed to let the matter out of one's own hands into the hands of God. In this sense, death is the epitome of human freedom. Whether the human deed is a matter of faith depends on whether people understand their own suffering as a continuation of their action, as a consummation of freedom. I find this very important and very comforting. And those were some thoughts that Bonhoeffer had that led to him eventually having his life taken on the gallows, with witnesses, even Nazi guards, saying he was one of the most peaceful people that they ever put on the gallows or took to the gas chamber. He had such peace. I think it's important. I haven't shared as much from Scripture. A few things I've shared, but I wanted to finish with this take-home truth from a really good chapter in Hebrews about suffering and hardships. And so I'd like you to think about what the writer of Hebrews shares with us in this truth, and have you chew on that a little bit as we enter into 2025. Having no idea, CMDA, what hardships await any of us ahead, we have some of our members who are in the midst of hardship. We don't know what's coming. But we do know the one who's in charge of those events. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their father? If you're not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. Moreover, we've all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of spirits and live? They disciplined us for a while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who've been trained by it.